You're listening to Passions and Prologues, a literary podcast where each week I interview an author about a thing they love and how it inspires their work. I'm your host, Adam Sokol, and today's guest is Holly James, who is a rom-com writer who has a new book out this summer called The Deja Glitch. And lately, I've been interviewing a lot of authors who have just perfect pitches for their books. And this one is no different. It's basically like a new age version of Groundhog's Day. It is so delightful. It's so wonderful. We get into the book, obviously, but it's basically a 24-hour time loop where one person is trying to get the other to fall in love with them. And we join them in the middle of this process, not at the very start, but it's just... the whole thing is delightful. You're really, really going to love it. And this conversation is all about Holly's passion for science, specifically the science of sleep. This is something that she does as part of her day job. And I had many, many questions about it because I don't know that I've talked about it much on here, but I am a horrible sleeper. I get it from my mom. If you're listening, thanks so much for that. I suffer from a lot of different struggle to sleep maladies or abnormalities or whatever you want to call them. But it was really, really fun to get to pick Holly's brain about her day job and how it connects to her writing career. And again, I really, really think you're going to love this book, The Deja Glitch, which we talk about for a while. I have another book recommendation for you as well, a little bit unrelated this time, but I just finished Silver Nitrate, the new book by Silvia Moreno Garcia. Silvia Moreno Garcia is very well known for her book Mexican Gothic. And this story is a little bit different. If you are a fan of classic movies, I think you'll really, really like it. She dives into this magical, mysterious world where there are people who have the power to perform magic, and they choose to do so through the lens, quite literally, of old movies. It's really, really interesting. It's really fascinating. It is a story that I don't know that I was exactly expecting it when I went in. I saw that there was a new book available by Silvia Moreno Garcia, and I figured, you know what, I'm going to give it a try. It was really interesting. It was a really, really unique plot. And again, if you're a fan of old Hollywood, stories about mysterious magic and witches and warlocks and things like that, this is a really good book to kind of be, as I've been talking about a little bit here, a warm up to spooky season. So that's Silver Nitrate by Silvia Moreno Garcia. Okay, that is just about it. I want to give you a little bit more housekeeping. Of course, you can always find me on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram at Passions and Prologues, where I share clips of the episode if you want to check out some of the videos. I also do book recommendations and all sorts of fun stuff. All across, you can find me at Passions and Prologues and all those places. You know how to use social media. I'm not going to make you figure out how to find me. I believe in you all. I have confidence in you all. Okay, that is all of the housekeeping. I am so excited for you guys to hear this conversation with Holly James, author of The Deja Glitch, on Passions and Prologues.
I'm Anne Marie Kelly. Wild Precious Life is a podcast about dreaming big, digging in and connecting across distance, division, and loss. In each episode, I talk with prize-winning writers, musicians, and wanderers who remind all of us how we can make the most of the time we have. So meet me here. Let's walk and talk and dream and discover what it means to be wild, precious, and brave.
Okay, Holly, what is something you are super passionate about that we're going to be discussing today?
I am super passionate about all things science. Mm-hmm. I actually am a scientist in my career outside of writing. And I think the more I think about it, I think it kind of subconsciously influences my writing. It's mm-hmm. never really intentional how I incorporate it into my writing process or anything. But yeah, kind of reflecting on it, I think it does play a big part in who I am as an author.
Yeah. So was science the subject that you found yourself drawn to as a kid, like in middle school and everything, or was it kind of late blossoming in your passions?
You know, that's a good question. I think it was a later blossom. So I have a PhD in psychology. So I went, you know, full bore scientist. And I think I really fell in love with that type of science. So like human behavior research. And I'm not a clinical psychologist. So I'm not a therapist or a counselor. I do research studies. I conduct intervention studies actually specifically on sleep currently in my current day job. But I think I kind of came into that. I remember a distinct moment as an undergraduate doing like a homework assignment for a statistics class or something. And I was just poring over this Excel spreadsheet. And I had this moment of like, I love this. Like, I love this enough to pursue it in a passionate way. And I know that's a pretty rare realization. So I think I realized how, you know, like how important that was, like kind of this profound moment of like, wow, yeah, this is what I want to pursue. This is what I want to do. But up until that, I think in like middle school and high school, I was much more into like arts, like the creative side of, of life, language and reading and books and music. I've played music my whole life too. And I don't know. Yeah. I think something just kind of flipped in my brain when I got to, I think it was, I was more exposed to this high advanced level of scientific research and methodology and statistics that I was like, all right, this is what I really enjoy.
Yeah. So I'm going to bounce around just a little bit because
go for it.
As a person who is both in therapy and it's the best thing I've ever done for myself, but also have horrible sleep patterns and I'm a terrible, terrible sleeper. So I'm curious, like the sleep, what is the aspects of sleep that you're currently studying? This, I'm just going to preface, this may be interesting to me and me alone, but I don't care. It's my body. So I'm going to ask, like, what are you currently studying?
So no, sleep struggles are very, very common. And I currently work for a sleep tracking company. That's our general platform, but it's funny to talk about this in detail because I usually like keep my career separate.
Oh yeah. No, we don't have to go in detail. I'm sorry.
It's just interesting. It's just interesting to have you be interested in it because I'm usually talking about books, but so I work for a company where we test like non-pharmacological sleep interventions. So like behavioral and environmental, like bedroom environment, anything from like bedding to, you know, lighting to even like aromatherapy kind of fragrance stuff to behavioral interventions like CBTI, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia specifically, things like that to test if these different kind of consumer products can improve people's sleep. And we specifically look at populations of people who are not diagnosed with a clinical sleep disorder. So there's this huge, huge portion of the population that is like sub-threshold clinical disorder where they do struggle to sleep, but they're not kind of over the edge of needing a medical intervention or, you know, some kind of more rigorous intervention where these more behavioral or environmental changes can actually improve their sleep. So I spend all day leading a team that conducts remote research studies on those kinds of interventions. So we test people in their homes, basically. I don't work in a sleep lab, remote sleep lab.
Yeah, no, this honestly, like to me, it is super fascinating. Again, as a person who like, I don't know how much if I've ever talked about it on here, but like I do suffer from like night terrors and like very, very infrequent, but like sleep paralysis and just like not fun stuff to go through. But it's something where I have tried, you know, like the like nasal breathing, and I've admittedly tried like CBD and like trying to do just different types of like meditation before, and nothing so far has worked for me. But it is something I have become much more interested in for obvious reasons in my own life.
Yeah, it's usually a combination of things that works best for people. Sleep is so dynamic and multifaceted that there's unfortunately not one like silver bullet that fixes everything. You know, it might take you a long time to fall asleep, or you might wake up multiple times during the night, or you, I don't know, sleep too long. That actually is a thing where you don't sleep long enough so it's hard to pin down like what the one thing is that could resolve all your issues. But we have found pretty commonly it's a combination of bedroom environment and even like temperature and, you know, winding down properly for before bed and limiting your screen time and, you know, all those things we know that we're supposed to do that we don't
we all struggle to do.
Yes.
Okay, well, at the risk of this becoming dangerously close to me, like just flat out asking advice for myself, I'll slightly adjust my line of questioning. So was this something, because I totally understand, like for me, my day job is I do marketing and I love storytelling. I love writing, all these different things. And I'm currently marketing a sales company and I like it, but it's not like I didn't go to school and like graduate school and be like, I one day want to write about business and sales development. Like it just
was a great opportunity and it's a wonderful job, but I never like envisioned it. So when you kind of had that aha moment, you're like, oh my God, I really left this like research aspect of science. You know, were there specific areas like you were drawn to? Like, is sleep something you've always been interested in, or is that just kind of like currently like what was a good opportunity for you? And I guess like what aspects of science and that research and like the human experience and human behavior drew you towards it?
Yeah, I kind of stumbled into sleep. I didn't study sleep in my graduate training, so I know actual, you know, neuroscientists who studied sleep and circadian rhythms and are extreme experts in that area. And I just like have scratched the surface of that just by necessity for my profession. So I wouldn't call myself an expert in that by any means, but my expertise is more in research methodology and design and like statistics. So I learned quickly when you're transitioning from an academic world into an industry career, that is a skill set that industry wants to basically buy from you. Yeah. They want someone who knows how to do research and do their statistics and do all of that. So that also wasn't specifically what I studied in graduate school. I actually studied stress physiology. So my degree is in health psychology, and I looked at acute stress responses like the fight or flight response and salivary cortisol. I did very gross, squishy laboratory research with literal spit samples for years and years. So yeah, I basically took, I was always interested in kind of the intersection of health behaviors and technology and how technology could be leveraged to improve health and, you know, conduct health interventions. And when I was in grad school, I was studying acute stress physiology in the context of social media use. This was back in like, you know, 2014 to 17 was the prime of when I was doing that. And I kind of look nowadays, I look at, you know, all of these studies that have since come out and even like documentaries, like what was the one on Netflix, the Social Dilemma. And I'm just like, told you so. told you this years ago. Because that's what my research was on. It was how, you know, this impact of this kind of acute impact of social media exposure and use on stress physiology, but also just on your emotions and your cognitions. So I feel like I'm wildly off topic of your question, but
no, honestly, this is great. So my job before, the one that I work for now, I worked for a tech company where I had to write and market to developers. And one of my favorite coworkers was actually, she was a behavioral scientist. She basically like explored the psychology and the sociology of like how developers work together and all of these, like kind of to a smaller scope of what you were just talking about, like, but specific to developers, like how to improve the overall developer experience and from both as an individual and as a team and like all of these different things. So I promise you like this, I am a nerd for this stuff too. Like tangentially, like I knew enough where I would ask her questions about the experience and I'd be like, can you tell me the science behind X, Y, and Z? And she'd be like, oh my God, totally. So I will steer us back towards writing, because you said before we started recording, you said that you think that your passion for science, there is, it's sort of like, is the underlying aspect of your writing as well. So kind of how do the two tie together for you?
Yeah, I think, so what I mentioned earlier, when I, through my education up until I became more engaged in science as an undergraduate than a graduate student, I was really into like language arts and writing and reading and music and things. And I think then when I got into that really heavily analytical and logic-centered other side of things in my scientific career, I think part of my brain was still really craving that creative outlet. So I've always dabbled in creative writing, you know, even as like a teenager and younger, I would write little short stories and poetry and stuff. And then in graduate school, I think to help myself deal with the stress and pressure of that, I went back to creative writing and I just started spilling stuff onto the page and seeing where it went, see what would happen. And I think I didn't write anything like novel length until like 2016, maybe. And maybe it was a little sooner than that. But again, I was just, you know, kind of seeing what would happen. I didn't really know what I was doing. And then I got brave enough to like seek feedback on it. And was told like, hey, you're kind of good at this, you know? So then I started looking into pursuing traditional publishing and what breaking into the industry would entail. And wow, the learning curve on that,
into publishing is,
it's a doozy for sure. Yeah, getting into that. So I queried for 3 years before I found my current literary agent, and she actually signed me as a thriller writer. So before I ventured into kind of women's fiction rom-com. I was writing thrillers because that's my favorite genre to read. And it just kind of made sense that would be what I would write. And my first book didn't sell. And then the pandemic hit and I went kind of stir crazy. And I wanted to write something much lighter and fluffier and happier than a dark murder mystery. So I did. And that became my debut novel, Nothing But the Truth, that came out in 2022, last year. Yeah. So from there, I've kind of transitioned into this rom-com career path, which I love and is just joyous and so fun to be so engaged in that world. But yeah, I think looking back on it all, I think I really was craving a creative outlet when I was going through this really intense, rigorous scientific training program. Like that whole part of my brain was like, I'm dying, come back. So I did. And now I have these kind of like split brain dual careers where I'm, you know, spending 9 to 5 doing really intense scientific research and then spending 5 to midnight writing love stories. So yeah, it's, I never thought I'd be here, but I'm thrilled to be here. It's so cool. And it's sometimes hard to balance just in terms of like bandwidth and energy and hours in the day. But in terms of like being content with both parts of it, I love it. I couldn't create a more perfect scenario for the type of stimulation that I crave and enjoy. Like both things just fuel it so much. And it's happy chaos.
So first thing, as a person who's currently querying as well and has been for a while, you said like the 3 years thing actually kind of makes me feel better in a way, because
it's so hard.
It's such a process. It's so hard. Like it could be, you know, you just need to catch like the right literation on the right day in the right mood. Like, and it is so just like, you know, you get all those emails where they're like, not for me, you have great writing, but no thanks.
Yes. It's like, yes. Those are the glowing rejections where like, this is amazing, I love this. And then, no.
Thanks so much. That hurts somehow more. But I'm curious how, because like you said, you love reading thrillers. And like I know what you mean about like when there's a genre that you kind of hold very close to your heart. But how did you kind of go from that to, to writing, like you said, like women's fiction, rom-com? Because like I love the manuscript I wrote is like speculative fiction, magical realism. I love reading horror. I could not write a horror novel, like personally. I just know I couldn't. But I'm curious, you know, how you decided like, okay, I'm going to shift genres and give it a try from a different angle.
That's a great question. And I think, so I joke, maybe it's not a joke, but my toxic trait as an author is I'll write something and send it to my agent and be like, I don't know what genre this is. Like, good luck. And she's sold 5 books for me. So, I mean, she's amazing at figuring it out and pinpointing it. But I think that transition for me really came in 2020 during like the peak lockdown of kind of everyone having this collective insanity. So my first book, Nothing But the Truth, is very, it's pitched as like a feminist liar. Mm-hmm. So it's about, you know, the movie with Jim Carrey from the 90s. It's about this woman, she's a Hollywood publicist, and she wakes up on her 30th birthday after drinking a magical cocktail the night before. Mm-hmm. And she can't lie. She can't lie to herself or to anyone, it trails her whole day of the kind of problems that causes and all these realizations she has, and she kind of, you know, revolutionizes her life. And the idea for that really came to me in the peak of the lockdown, where I remember I was like laying on my bed one day, staring at the ceiling, thinking about just how strange everything had become, but also how much had shifted in terms of these expectations put on women in particular for having to basically like put on a costume to go to the office, you know, to like hair and makeup and outfits. And I started thinking like, why did we even do that in the first place? You know, like, where does that expectation come from? And that was the seed for that story. And then it just spiraled into this whole lightly magical, comedic, ridiculous, fun day in Hollywood. And I didn't really intend to write something like that. It just, it was what was making me happy in that moment. And I guess I was craving, you know, something lighter and funnier than what I was normally reading or writing. And I mean, it's the one that landed me a book deal. So
yeah,
so I will take it back. I'm happy.
Seemed to be the right choice. Yeah, absolutely.
I guess. Yeah, it worked out for sure.
And then sorry. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. From there. So that was a one book deal. And then the follow-up, I remember going back and forth with my agent with a couple ideas, like trying to figure out, but since it was a one book deal, I didn't have to like write another book in the same genre. I could basically do, you know, whatever. And I wasn't super sure I wanted to write romance because I didn't think that I like could. I don't know. Yeah. I wasn't, I mean, I'm, I, now I am, but before now I wasn't like a huge romance reader, you know, and I know the readers, that fan base is just so dedicated and like, they love their tropes and they, you know, they are so just wonderfully intense about everything. I was like, oh, I don't want to let them down. So I was a little intimidated to actually take on romance. So I would say The Deja Glitch is, it is a rom-com, but it's still kind of on the more like magical personal journey side, not super, super focused on the couple and their relationship, although it is. But I think it's, I think my third book is like full on romance.
Yeah.
So I'm like progressively getting closer and closer to the full genre. Yeah.
So I want to ask about The Deja Glitch, which is your newest book. And for people who don't know, it's like a 24-hour kind of time loop story. I honestly, the blurb on the front by Jodi Picoult is like, it's like a perfect description. It's like Good Love Actually.
I know, and Groundhog Day died.
It was like perfect, but it is. It's like a 24-hour kind of time loop story. And first off, I love it. That is in no way encapsulating the whole story. But I want to ask, like, what was it about time loops that made you say like, oh, this could be an interesting way to tell a story?
Another great question. Yeah. So the kind of, I guess, path into this one, again, I didn't intend for it to be a time loop story. That wasn't my original idea. So I usually, whenever I write something, I get an idea for like the big like hook, like the, you know, broad overarching hook of the story. And in this case, I really wanted to write a story around a couple where one person couldn't remember the other person in a comedic way. I just thought that would be kind of funny to explore, you know, if like the love of your life came up to you and was like, it's me, you know me, and you had no idea who they were. Like, what would happen? How would that play out? And so I had that idea kind of floating around in my head for a while. And then this, so I actually drafted this book in the summer of 2021. So it's 2 years ago now. Wow. I remember I was trying to figure out how to execute that idea. Like, how could I, you know, write a full story around that? And at that time, Olivia Rodrigo's song Deja Vu was all over the radio. And I remember hearing it and like singing along to it one day. And I truly had this like aha moment of like, oh, Deja Vu is the perfect avenue into this story. So I started thinking, you know, the character who couldn't remember anything was feeling like things were familiar, but she didn't really know why. She couldn't explain why she recognized this guy or why she had certain memories, like fuzzy memories playing out throughout the day. And then the time loop entered the equation when I thought maybe she has the sense of deja vu because she's been here before. She's lived through it before, but can't fully remember it. Mm-hmm. And time loops, you know, it's a really popular kind of trope convention. And I wanted to do something different with it. So in this story, we actually only see a single day of the loop, and we see it from the perspective of the person who doesn't know that they're in a time loop. Because I didn't want to have to go through the repetition of the day over and over and over and over. Mm-hmm. So by the time we as the reader intersect the story, they've been in the time loop for 5 months, but to the main character, it feels like it's the first day that all this has happened to her.
Well, and I loved that you chose the person who has not been in the time loop, because I do feel like when you see the time loop stories, obviously Groundhog Day, and then there was a movie that came out a couple years ago with like Andy Samberg, that there is a time loop. I can't remember the name of that.
Palm Springs,
which I really liked. But I feel like you're so often we're shown as the viewer or the reader or the person ingesting the content, like you said, it is that repetitive, like, oh, look, Bill Murray's living this day 10,000 years in a row, whatever it is. And it has to be a really unique way to say like, okay, it has to be very funny or interesting that you're going to see the same things over and over again, or you're going to lose people's interest. You know, so I do think it is such a unique way to be like, no, we're going to go from the person who's like, has no idea. And so I think it's like this really fun thing where as the reader, you might know what to expect, and like being able to look at it through a person's eyes who has no idea what's coming, and like seeing how the day changes from kind of like from loop to loop. Like for you, how did you go about saying like, okay, how do I get her from like, this has been happening for months, to how do we resolve the issue? Like obviously without giving away the ending, but you know, how did you decide like how to make incremental quote unquote improvements every single time?
Yeah, it was tricky. It was tricky from a pacing perspective to, you know, because I don't know, I have a thing for stories that take place in one day. My first book is like that too. I love those kind of stories. I love watching and reading them, and I love creating them. I don't really know why. I just feel, I don't know, the immediacy, kind of an urgency created by, you know, this all has to happen in a certain amount of time is just really exciting to me. So to fit everything into a single day that needed to happen was a challenge, but mm-hmm. also making it like not too much. I think we cut like one scene because it was just too much running around, too busy. But I did, yeah, I had to keep careful track of, because it's told from her perspective and it's the first time she's experienced this, but it has also happened many, many times before. I had to keep really careful track of like, what might she already know? And what does he know? You know, he knows everything. And, you know, he's been through this before. And when things changed, how would they react to the change? And, you know, would they, you know, to her, it feels like it's the first time, but he's like, oh, this is different. Something has changed here. And here's why. And I also really wanted to touch on kind of all aspects of their lives. So if you've read the book, you know that it's not just like their love story. It's about her professional career and her family relationships and her friendships. And she kind of has barriers in all these different places. And I think that really played into this notion that they're stuck. You know, they're stuck in this loop. They're physically stuck, but they're also metaphorically stuck in so many different ways. And doing that allowed me to have all these different scenes that touched on these different aspects of their lives that kind of carried them through the day. And this, you know, the thread through the whole thing is that they're moving past these barriers, but they're all different kinds of barriers. And this is a very like non-spoilery explanation to answer your question.
No, yeah, we're like dancing around. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I don't want to give stuff away, but so something I am really interested in is when I speak to authors who have, you know, like you mentioned, like when you write your first novel, people who may not be aware, like you said, you write it and you don't have an agent at the time. You don't have an editor. You don't have deadlines. And you can kind of make whatever you want. Like you said, like you didn't know if you were writing a romance novel or whatever. You were just like, you wanted to write a story. And then you become known for something. And now you've written a second kind of book in this. And you said like your third one is more even romance. Like, do you feel... pressure is the wrong word, but like, do you feel inclined to understand like, okay, well, I'm going to need to write a romance and I want to give it like a marketable kind of hook or something? Like, do you feel that pressure as you're pitching more and more stories and then putting things together?
Yeah, for sure. It's like you said, like your first book is really just for yourself. You know, there's no outside pressure on it at all. But once you have sold one or multiple books and you have a team, your publishing team working with you, that's one of the biggest challenges, to kind of like detach from the business side of it, because always in the back of my head now is like sales. You know, is this going to sell? Is it going to sell enough for my publisher to offer on my next book? Is this the end of my career? Do I have to like change to a different pen name? You know, it's all these things that are really out of your control, but also dictate your career. And that is a really kind of big emotional struggle that I think is not talked about that much in publishing. Yeah. Like people just kind of, I don't know, pretend it doesn't exist. But I've talked to other writers that I'm really close to, and that is very normal to feel the pressure of like what's going to happen next, you know, and you just have, it's just so much is out of the author's control. But all that being said, I keep my readers in mind in the sense that like, I know I've come to learn like what they really like, you know, the scenes that they like, you know, squeal and kick their feet at, those are the ones that I want to keep in my books. Cause as a reader myself, you know, I think of the things that just bring me so much joy and make me feel like I could like explode with happiness. That's what I try to create. Cause that's what people come to the genre for, you know, they want that feeling of joy and that just, you know, emotion of happiness out of these books. So it's kind of a hard, not kind of, it's a very hard line to walk in, you know, satisfying your audience, but also writing something marketable and staying true to yourself as an author. You know, you don't want to write something you hate because then you're stuck promoting it for years. Yeah. It's a wild industry. I was definitely, when I was querying, that's a whole different set of emotions and struggles. But then once you are agented and have book deals, it's a whole other set of challenges, emotional challenges that I wasn't prepared for. I didn't know what to expect. And it's hard. It's hard to create something you love so much and then just kind of like let it go out into the world and hope good things happen to it. Yeah.
So one more question just about all this. You mentioned at the beginning, like you started doing the creative writing because you had that like itch to like be creative and kind of fill that like void of a thing that you really did miss. Now it's become like you said, like a second career. Like, does it still feel, I'm assuming yes, but like, does it still feel like satisfying? And does it kind of like re-energize you to do your day job? Because I, like you said, time, like the time restraints is obviously a very real thing as a working author and a person working full time. Like, does it still feel like recharging to you?
Absolutely. I think I've learned, now that I'm several years into the whole publishing experience, I've learned to find the components of it that really truly bring me joy and like cling on to those. And for me, that's drafting. Like, I love drafting a new story. I love it. I mean, I tolerate revisions because I have to, but drafting, like, it's, I'm in this like complete flow state and, you know, everything is just wonderful and amazing. So that's what I really take joy in that, and I try to be really, really present for that and not think about, you know, is my editor not going to like this? Is my publisher going to reject this? Yeah. Is it going to flop? And, you know, and I do think that the balance of having that time to be creative is really kind of stabilized by like my day job, by doing, you know, all this other really heavily analytical stuff. And I really think that one would suffer without the other. Mm. I get asked all the time, like, would you quit your day job? And I don't know. I mean, if I could, you know, financially, I mean, that'd be hard to say no to if I could financially, but currently I can't. But I do think if I, you know, was only doing my day job, I would feel like something was missing. And if I was only doing writing, I would feel like something was missing. Yeah. So I'm currently able to still do both. And it can be a roller coaster on any given day because publishing is so unpredictable. Like, you can get, you know, a life-changing email. I'm in California, so I get emails starting at like 6 a.m. because everyone's in New York. But, you know, I've been in like bed before and gotten an email that's like amazing news. And, you know, I like shout, my poor husband's like, oh, what's happening? But, you know, those are good days, but then you can also have a really bummer of a day and then you have to walk straight into a work meeting. And it's a lot to kind of keep in the air at the same time. But I've gotten a little better at kind of compartmentalizing one career versus the other when I have to do them at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I don't have a lot of great advice on how to do all of this, but I think something I've learned is just to be aware, to be aware that this is challenging and you will have a lot of up and down emotions. And of course, you know, this is coming from my psychology training. I'm like trying to be everyone's therapist here, but that's what I've learned has worked for me, you know, just an awareness of like, yeah, it's normal to feel pretty sad about this or very happy about this, and they will, they will balance out and the feelings will pass.
Yeah. Oh, that is so fascinating to me. Okay. Because you're working two different jobs, I don't want to keep you for much longer. I have one last question. I always end by having the author who's come on give a recommendation of any kind. It can be a book, it could be a TV show, it could be a movie, it could be a recipe, just something you want to recommend that you think more people should know about.
Oh gosh, more people should know about. Well, I mean, the first thing that jumped to my mind is the movie adaptation of Red, White, and Royal Blue came out today/last night. I've already watched it. It's incredible. But I think a lot of people already know about that.
Yeah.
Because it's so popular. But no, that was, it was 10 out of 10 for me. Perfect adaptation. Otherwise, I don't know.
What's a book that you've loved this year that it can be relatively popular? Oh, what's something you've loved this year?
That's a hard question too. There are so many. Yeah. I still read a lot darker than I write. I love thrillers. I love dark genre. But I recently read Megan Collins's new thriller/suspense. It's called Thicker Than Water. Mm-hmm. That one was really, really good. It's about these sisters-in-law who are also best friends, and the man they have in common, so one of their husbands and the other one's brother, is accused of murder. And it's of a very like violent, creepy murder. And it's just this whole story of how their relationship, these two women have to navigate that scenario and who do they trust, and everything falls apart, and it's really good. Megan's an amazing writer. So yeah, I definitely recommend that one.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. I'm impressed you have time to read with everything else that you're doing.
I wish I had more time. My tower of books is
ever growing. Yeah,
approaching dangerous heights.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Holly, the Dayjack Glitch is so much fun. It's so delightful. And like I told you before I started recording, I was so excited to get to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Passions and Prologues is proud to be an Evergreen podcast and was created by Adam Sokol. It was produced by Adam Sokol and Sean Rule Hoffman. And if you are interested in this podcast and any other Evergreen podcast, you can go to evergreenpodcast.com to discover all the different stories we have to tell.
Bonjour. This is Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. I'm Andrew Pryor, and every week I bring you the wonderful and fabulous people involved in French food, whether they're here in France like me or from around the world. Enchanté. Each week, we dive into a specific topic, be it a French dish, an ingredient, or a French cuisine cooking technique. My guests are all about French food. So come join me on Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. Bon app.